Hello and welcome to a very special DJ Grover Radio. Today I am joined by a special guest. He is a talented musician, plays the squeeze box, which is also known as the accordion, the keyboard, the bass saxophone, and many other instruments. He is also a lead singer. Please welcome from They Might Be Giants, Mr. John Linnell.
I feel like I'm almost my line here. Like, hello, I'm behind the curtain. Now I emerge.
Well, yeah, you know, well, I got to create that magic through radio since I'm actually a video.
Yeah.
I'm a video guy at heart, so that's my my background. So seriously, thank you so much for being here. I actually had to fanboy for a little bit because I have been a fan of They Might Be Giants for about 20 years since I was in high school. I can still remember, you know, after a bad breakup, being in my car screaming the lyrics to "Don't Let Start," being with my friends in like their living room, trying to learn how to sing and dance to Anna Ang at the same time. and Flood was basically the soundtrack to my whole high school career. So thank you so much for just being such an influence on my life. Your music has
thank
really meant
you.
A lot. So, all right. So enough about me.
It's a heavy responsibility.
Well, you know, as long as I think you guys just put a lot of love and effort into the music. And I think that just comes through and it really reflects to the fans that enjoy what you guys create. Okay, so enough about me. Let's talk about why you're here. It's part of the Dial-A-Song Radio Network. For those that aren't aware, could you kind of explain what Dial-A-Song is?
Sure. Well, Dial-A-Song began its life in 1983, I think. John Flansburgh and I had a phone line with a phone machine attached to it. We were able to stack up cassettes of all of our latest demos. This is before we put out an album or anything. It was very, you know, obscure local New York band. But we were, you know, we were determined to get people to hear us even if they couldn't buy our records or hear us on the radio. So we thought we'll advertise in the back page of the Village Voice and other places. You can call up and listen to our song. And that was kind of a great, you know, you think in a way that's the way you begin to promote your hitherto unheard of band. But we actually stuck with it right through getting signed and beginning to tour and getting a major label deal and all that stuff. We continued to run Dial-A-Song because we thought, in a way, I guess it was at the heart of our philosophy, which was, you know, we want to deliver music directly to the audience. You know, we want to have a direct connection, as it were. So that was the idea. And unfortunately, over time, the technology became very difficult to maintain. Over time, we found out the machines that we had been using were no longer made a few years into it. And the ones we had were very hard to get repaired after a while. They were just, you know, tending to break down a lot. And so at some point, and we tried to switch over to a computer-based system in the 90s. And that, unfortunately, was just even worse in a way. It was just very buggy, there just wasn't a reliable way to continue making Dial-A-Song. Eventually, they invented the internet, and then we were, in a sense, we were able to continue this idea of making music available directly into people's homes through this, you know, this wonderful innovation. And I think, you know, in a sense, we kind of felt like, well, Dial-A-Song is still like a part of who we are. So we want to continue with the franchise, I guess, you know, sort of keep the brand alive. So this year we are, as you know, we are putting out songs, which you can call up a phone number and listen to the songs, as in the old days. The songs are also available weekly on the Dial-A-Song Radio Network, and they're also available as a download. People can sign up for personal downloads And in addition to all of that, we'll be putting out an album with all this material on it very soon. So we're continuing with this sort of half a dozen different ways of experiencing dial songs that are in the spirit of the original phone number that you call.
Yeah, you know, and I remember actually trying to call that number when I was growing up, and I kind of got into it late, so the busy signal was mostly what I heard. Just because it got to the point where it was so popular, but it was, you know, there'd be times I'd stay up till about 3:30 in the morning just so I could find that window when it wasn't so busy that I could get through. And
oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, with the combination of it being busy and often being broken, I guess it made it harder to get on.
Yeah, but it was always such a nice feature because, you know, it wasn't like you had to rely on a radio station or, you know, some video music station to kind of hear the music. It was a direct thing. It's like, I want to hear, you know, that music, so I'm going to call up a number and actually hear it. And it just seems like Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. It's just funny, as I was saying, like now that's a utterly commonplace thing that you can pursue all your personal, you know, marginal interests online. And it's actually, of course, quite easy to find all these things by yourself while you're at home, but it was not this. It was not so 30 years ago. So in a sense, we've been lucky that we've lasted long enough to have the culture and the technology catch up to what we were trying to do.
You know, and I think, like, you know, in the spirit of that is that you're really trying to reach out kind of directly to fans, and I think that's something that, you know, I've always been a fan of, you know, but that's part of it. It's also the fan club as well was always a big hit for me. But like nowadays, you guys are also really busy active on social media, like Twitter, Facebook. You also have a Tumblr page as well. So you guys are really still connected to the fans, which I think is such an important thing these days.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the technology aside, I think we kind of feel like people still treat us like their personal thing, which is, so lucky and hard to cultivate in a way, you know, that it's so easy to become impersonal in the culture. I think, and a lot of artists are in a hurry to establish themselves as something that is mass market, and often they're kind of sacrificing that personal touch, maybe it's inevitable and maybe we have to some extent, but I think we see that the value of people thinking that we, we're their personal discovery, for example, that we were not foisted on anyone.
Yeah, and it's funny, I was thinking about it as I was preparing for this interview. There's so many, big bands out there, and there is that really large disconnect between kind of the band and the fans. There's, basically the creators and the consumers. And I feel like, there is a much, much bigger tie, I think, between They Might Be Giants and their fans through stuff like Dial a Song and through the social media. And I think it's kind of a really special thing that you guys have been able to cultivate, like you said. And, I think there's a tenuous line there of how much of it do you have and how do you kind of keep it without, making it seem kind of insincere and impersonal? I think you guys have done a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I guess it helps to sort of just keep bearing in mind that, and not take the audience for granted, And the other thing to me is a little mysterious is that we've continued to collect, new fans. And I don't really know I don't know how you would do that if you were trying to, but it seems we've been very lucky in having some, continual new interest in the band. In other words, when we perform, I'm always surprised to see that there's a lot of really young people showing up. I know a lot of bands from our generation. I love these bands, and I still go out to see them, but there's a lot of there's a high concentration of bald guys and gray-haired guys, in those crowds. And, nothing against that. I'm old, But for some reason, we've continued to attract a lot of younger people. And I don't know why that is, but we're very grateful.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you mention, you know, you see them at a concert, like in the audience. I think, you know, another way that you connect to fans as well is at those concerts. I don't really feel like they're a kind of sit and consume kind of thing. Again, there's a lot of interaction with the crowd that's there. I remember seeing you guys in Boulder, Colorado, and I think John Flansburgh, before one of the songs, just said, you know, just to warn you, before we play this song, I want to let you know that sometimes when we play this song, people tend to form a giant conga line. So just a heads up before we actually start this song. And then sure enough, you guys start playing and the entire audience formed a conga line. And it wasn't like you guys said, hey, you should do a conga line to this song. You just said, hey, you know, maybe this might happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I think we were deliberately putting the suggestion in there in the line, obviously. I think that, you know, we and of course, you know, that's something we felt like. I think there was some band that we saw that started a conga line, and we thought, this is how you get the audience engaged. Like, they're doing something supremely ridiculous, and they're really enjoying it. And, you know, a lot of bands would kind of be too concerned about them making them feeling like they're, you know, distracting from their integrity project by having something absurd like a conga line happen. You know, we do love our dignity. You know, we are very very interested in cultivating a dignified appearance. But there is something great, just immediately great about that kind of audience engagement. You know, up to a point, I would say. I think there, you know, we John and I played Spring Break in Panama City, Florida, and I can tell you that there is a limit to the amount of audience just purely enjoying themselves and not really giving a crap about what's happening on stage that we can tolerate. You know, I think we found that limit at Spring Break. You know, we obviously were a total sideshow to something else, and it was a point I think where we kind of felt like, well, fun is fun. Yeah, but we're up here doing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's also to part of that. You know, it's knowing your audience too. I'm sure that, you know, when you do something like that, I know you're doing a lot of concerts in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and I'm sure that audience is a little bit more receptive to the types of kind of the outlandish stuff you guys will do.
Absolutely, the Panama City people were obviously not really there to see us in the first place, but you know, we try and win people over.
Yeah, and so I know you're going to be doing a lot of that this year. It's the year of They Might Be Giants on the road. You're doing an international world tour, going all over the place. I know you'll be in D.C.
The international world.
Yes, I know. I realized that was a little bit of a double statement there. So, but I know, like, you're going to be here in D.C. April 24th. I believe that show is already sold out, but I know you're going to be...
Indeed.
Touring several other places. Like I said, you got the monthly shows in Brooklyn. You're going to be in Philadelphia, all over the United States for the next couple of months. And then I guess eventually you guys will head off into the rest of the world, the international world.
Yeah, we're just putting it together. We're probably going to, we've got some shows in Australia that are starting to coalesce, I think, in the fall. You know, we usually hit the UK at some point. So I'm imagining that will happen. But as you say, people can come see us in Brooklyn. We're not impossibly far away from you. And we're playing at the end of every single month this year at the Williamsburg Music Hall, the last Sunday of each month. So that's 12 shows, one per month. So that's another great way to check us out if you miss us on the road.
And I know you guys are releasing a new album here as well, right? Is this kind of a way to get the new album out to audiences?
Absolutely. We're putting out all the Dial Phone material sometime in April. maybe, you know, a few days, maybe. I don't know the date, but very soon. We'll be continuing to put out more Dial-A-Thons for the rest of the year. We're putting out a song every week. So it really is just a blizzard of shows and songs coming from us this year. And I think in 2016, we'll be in the hospital. You can come visit us or send us some cards.
Yeah, I know. You took the entire 2014 off to not tour, basically focus on producing more music. And it seems like that was basically your chance to relax and get prepared for basically going everywhere.
Yeah. We did do some relaxing, although we were already starting up the engine for this year. Pretty early on last year, we started recording material for Dial-A-Thons. So we're uptight enough that we wanted to have a big backlog of material when this thing got rolling this year.
Now, I know in the past you've done adult shows, but for those who aren't familiar, you also do a lot of children's music. I actually have a 3-year-old daughter, and it was a very big joy in my life when she was starting to sing along They Might Be Giants songs and memorizing them, and it just was like, you know, warmed my heart that this music I grew up on is now music that she could enjoy. Do you have any plans to do some children's shows as well throughout the year?
Yes, we will be. I mean, I should point out, we haven't made an official announcement, but we are recording children's songs as part of this year's project, and we will assemble them into some kind of a kid's record at some point. We don't have a name or a date for it yet, but there definitely will be some of that, and we'll be doing some kind of shows that we might do. Some of the Williams for Music Halls might wind up being kids shows. For parents, look forward to that. Yeah, that's great. Well, 3 is a sweet age. That's
They're
very impressionable at age.
Yeah, well, you know, it's great too because the songs are so educational, but they're not in that, you know, here is what A is. It's, you know, it's fun, and it's also, you know, it's also music too that I can enjoy. I mean, I've definitely found myself listening to the children's albums on my own because it's still just, it's really good music.
Well, we figured out, I mean, I think this was something we figured out even before my son was born, you know, and most of the guys in the band have kids at this point. So we're very aware of the fact that a lot of kids' music is A, unbearable, and B, it must be listened to over and over again. I mean, it's almost the definition of a kid's record, that it's on permanent repeat. Because the kid, if they like it, is going to demand repeated listening. So with that in mind, we've tried in general to come up with material that won't drive parents completely crazy to the point where they want to crash the car. I had that experience with my own son when he was your daughter's age, there were some things that he really liked a lot, and we tried to steer him toward the stuff that we could stand to listen to.
Yeah, and I can absolutely vouch for the repeat song, basically one song on repeat for an hour straight. I can't tell you how many times I've heard Hot Dog.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, it was like a really special joy when she's listening to the Mickey Mouse Club theme and she starts calling out the Goofy and the Donald. And I mean, she'd never seen the program. She's only heard the song, but she already had known it. So it was a really special joy for me. So I also have to ask you, I'm also a big fan of your solo album, Songs of the 50 States.
Thank you.
Is there any possibility of you doing another solo project like that, maybe more music of the 50 States?
Yeah. I would say there's a possibility of it, but there's no plan. And as you know, we're intensely busy now. One thing that both John Flansburgh and I learned in the late 90s when we were experimenting with doing solo work was that it's harder to do it on your own. and we were doing Giants stuff at the same time. We were we were working simultaneously on our solo efforts while we were recording and working on They Might Be Giants project. So, it was interesting and fun. I found out that John does so much legwork that I would prefer not to do, involved in making, producing and promoting the work, that it gave me a newfound appreciation for his contribution.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could say, I say that my daughter listened to Hot Dog over and over again. I can say that I listened to South Carolina on repeat for days straight, basically, because that song, I just love that song so much. It may be one of my all-time favorites. It's a really good one. So that whole album actually is great. All right, so more existential question here. So you guys have done a lot of history music, famous people in history, Nikola Tesla, James K. Polk, Ensor, which, some of my favorites as well. I'm just curious, 100 years from now, say if a band actually does a song about They Might Be Giants, kind of what would be the things that you would want them to include in the song about you guys?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's not for me to say, I suppose. I suppose the thing is, we have always taken the position that the work is the important thing, and that we, John and I, are actually not all that interesting biographically. I would prefer that people, focus on the music. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of the general feeling I have. I feel a little hypocritical, because when I'm checking out other bands, I always want to know personal stuff about them. I think there's a thing about looking at the experience of listening to an album when I was growing up was partly looking at the album cover and identifying each person and then trying to figure out what their relationships were and so on. But saying that, I don't really think that's the draw for us. I don't want that to be the reason why, and I don't think it really is the reason why people are interested in what we're doing.
Well, and I you got to understand too, though, that a lot of the music that you guys write, they're not, bubblegum candy type songs that you hear and it's like, oh, it's talking about love and excitement. And it's they're very in depth. They're very intellectual. You are singing about Nikola Tesla, who most people don't know about. You also, Why Does the Sun Shine? There's so many songs that, that you've done that are kind of highly intellectual. So
I would say that the thing we maybe thought was cool about doing informational songs was that they could sound less boring than they actually maybe are. That there's a way you can propagandize about something by sending it to music that makes people interested in it. And you could actually pick something incredibly dry, like the story of James K. Polk, and force people to take interest in it, when in fact it's exactly the kind of thing people fall asleep trying to think, trying to not think about, that's like a subset of what we've tried, of what we've done in the past, is taking a subject that is not compelling and try to make it artificially interesting through music. That's something that appealed to us early on, but we're not, we're not strictly about, we are not educators, and we're not necessarily very informed about anything. I think it's more about the music and the songs, and how do you write different kinds of songs, and what's the definition of a song. I think we always liked the idea that you could expand that category.
Well, yeah, I think kind of the ancillary effect of doing stuff like that is that people that are interested in what you're singing about suddenly kind of have an instant connection to it. I know my brother, who's now a pharmacist, is double majored in biochemistry and molecular biology. You know, when he was in high school, he heard Mammal, and he's like, they're singing about monotremes. Like, nobody sings about monotremes, and I know what those are.
Nobody's true, yeah. Nobody sings about monotremes. Why does no one sing about monotremes? You know, well, I mean, there's probably a good reason. But
I mean, it does create that...
There's also, like, I think there is a sort of... Unfortunately, you know, I hate to frame it this way, but there's sort of a nerd appeal to obscure... information that, you know, that might be a discovery for somebody, but, you know, some people might hear it and go, I want to know about that, you know, and some people might just think, oh, that's funny, you know, that's amusing because, of course, who would care about that? So we're playing off, I suppose, both sides of that. There's a kind of campy appeal to obscure information, and then maybe it's actually interesting for some people, you know.
Well, I think I fall on the side of interesting because, you know, I'm not afraid to... Well, actually, I tend to enjoy musicians where if I have to pick up a dictionary or a thesaurus to figure out what you guys are actually singing about, sometimes I don't know the words, and it's like, I want to know. And that, to me, has its own appeal. So I fall on that side of things. I know you've got limited time, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. Is there anything that you wanted to share with fans that maybe that I didn't ask you about? Things, something that you wanted everybody else to know about?
Oh, well, I think we covered what we're doing this year, more or less. You know, we're doing a lot of shows, we're writing a lot of songs, but we are trying to keep the quality high, and we really want people to come out and check us out. We're trying to learn all this new stuff. And there was one very young listener was confused as to why we wouldn't just know all the songs that we've already recorded. Like, how could you record it and not know how to play it? So that was, in a way, a sort of awkward thing to try and explain. Like, well, you know, we thought we knew it, but it turns out we have to rehearse. So we're, you know, we're working hard trying to put a new show together and make it fun and interesting. There will be a lot of new and you know, hopefully exciting new material and stuff happening in the live show. So I encourage people to check it out, even if they think they've already seen our show.
Yeah, well, I've got my tickets to your DC show. I was able to snag those before they sold out, so I'm very happy about that. So I'm looking forward to seeing you guys when you come into town. Well, John, you know, thank you so much for your time today. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. This has just been...
Oh, my pleasure.
It's been a lifelong dream for me to be able to do something like this. So thank you so much for indulging me for the past half hour.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, John. Take care.
Bye.